Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time.
Time for Silver and Black today.
To the ground game. Touchdown, Las Vegas. We're breaking down the latest Raider news from on and off the field and bringing you conversations with newsmakers and record breakers. So hold on, Raider Nation. It's time to
get it on.
Here's your host, Scott Goldbranson and Mo Moulton.
It is game day, Raider Nation. Welcome back to Silver and Black today. Scott Goldbranson, Mo Moulton with you. Hope you get excited for the game tonight, right? Doesn't matter who's playing, who's not playing. We get to see young players fighting for their job in the setting of Canton, Ohio at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's going to be a blast, and it's football season once again. The long, arduous offseason is over for the fans. By the way, don't forget, make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. Get it, just subscribe to it. That's all we're asking you to do. Hit subscribe, whether it's audio, whether it's here on YouTube, if you're watching us on YouTube pregame, because we are the pregame show today on YouTube before the game kicks off at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. But do that for us. Also, when you get there and you listen to us, give us a 5-star rating. We'd appreciate it. But I bring on now my co-host, and that is, as I mentioned before, Mr. Mo Moulton. Finally made it, Mo. Game day is here, and now it's time. Yes, it's time for some football. Are we excited? I mean, I know this starts your busy work season, too, with your work at Bleacher Report and at SportsNot, even though the football is now 12 months a year. But here we go, man. It's time to kick off the season.
We've gotten so far into the offseason, we're bickering about preseason week one depth charts, or should I say week zero depth charts. That was the conversation leading up to our show today. So we're going to get into that. Also going to honor Mr. Speed Kills today. So that's going to be fun. Stay tuned for that.
That's right. And Mo there touched upon what we're going to do in the first segment. We'll talk about the game. We're also going to talk about three things you should pay attention to in tonight's game against the Jaguars. Yes, it's preseason. And I know some people get upset because they don't see the starters, which I'm willing to bet anybody out there that there will not be any of those starters playing in the game as we're used to now. But there's a lot of question marks. Mo and I have talked about the last few shows that we need to find out about, and this is how you start to do that. So that's in segment one. Segment two, all about Cliff Branch. Appreciate all the great feedback. We ran an interview that we did in 2019 with Cliff in the studio on Silver and Black today. And on Wednesday, and that was well received, and it was a short interview, but I hope that it just kind of brightened your day a little bit to hear him talk about why he felt at that time, and unfortunately he passed after that, but at that time why he didn't feel he was in the Hall of Fame, which Mo, he said, Mr. Davis. He was straight up, and it was not disrespectful because obviously he's best friends with Mark Davis, but he talked about why Al Davis was disliked, and he felt as though that was why he wasn't in there.
Yeah, he talked about that, and, you know, that could play into it. I'm sure the fans believe that played into it. But all that matters now that he's in, and he's going to be honored, and that's what we can move on right now.
Yes. And then after we do that and give the man the honor that he deserves here on Silver and Black today, we will close out the show with a visit from a man from the Far East known as Mostradamus. Mostradamus will be here. Mo, I don't know if you have any cool headgear you can put on that wouldn't be inappropriate for the show, but if you have something, maybe. If not, we have the crystal ball ready to go. We're going to talk about who shines and who whines. Now, that is kind of who's going to do well, who's not going to do well. People really don't whine, but I just used it because it rhymed. I mean, that's just the way it is, right? I was looking for some terminology, Mo, and I just said shines and whines. It rhymes. Let's do it. And then we'll talk about what will surprise us. Mo will give us that. Mostradamus, he'll talk about perhaps the first player's cut after the game, all this stuff. So we're going to get into prognosticating. Yes, prognosticating. Mo, you're a writer. You'll like that word. that will be in the final segment of the show. So let's get off and get started today, Mo, with the game coming up tonight in Canton, Ohio. Here I am in the same state, down Highway 71. But nonetheless, if you look at this game and you look at three things we want to pay attention to, we've beat the drum for the last two shows, but I want to start with it. And that, of course, is the offensive line. For fans out there watching the game, of course, the focus has been on Alex Leatherwood. But there are other things to see on that line. Mo, tonight's game, if fans are watching and they key in, they ISO, if you will, on the right side of the offensive line, what are they going to look for?
They're going to be looking at the right side of the offensive line, which I believe you will, I will be. Everyone who's a Raiders fan will be looking at, one, who's going to get the first reps at the position, because as I alluded to in the opener, Alex Leatherwood is still listed as a starting right tackle. Now, again, that doesn't mean much of anything. I remember when Jack Del Rio was the head coach, he joked that he let Will Kiss put together the depth chart. Will Kiss is the public relations guy for the Raiders, by the way.
Yes. Yes.
So the preseason depth chart doesn't mean anything. So I'm interested in who's going to get the first reps and how long do these guys play. I expect Lester Cotton Sr. to get most of the reps at right guard because that's where he's been throughout most of the spring and through training camp. But that right tackle position, who's going to get the reps and who's going to get a lot of playing time? Because it can mean different things. If a player's out there for a long period, it can mean the coach staff wants a longer look at him before they make a decision on whether to cut him or make him the second or third stringer. It could also mean that they want to get that guy warmed up because he's going to eventually start week one. So until we figure out what the motive for Josh McDaniels is, we really can't even draw any conclusions at the right tackle position, but we can evaluate how that player performed against the Jaguars.
And I want to address, too, Mo, we had some folks that pushed back a little bit on our discussion on the last show about Alex Leatherwood and his quote-unquote struggles that we had heard from media reports, we had heard from the player themselves in the press conference about it. And again, we hear the comparison to Colton Miller. And I immediately pushed back on that to say, hey, listen, number one, Colton Miller struggled at times. There's no question during his rookie season. But Colton Miller, Mo, had a pretty bad knee injury. It wasn't enough to keep him out of games, per se, but he played with it. He showed his toughness, and he actually progressed as the year went on. Now, to be fair, Leatherwood was switched from tackle to guard, but at the guard position, you didn't see a lot of progression over the course of the second half of last season. So talk, in your view, too, the differences between those two.
Yeah, I've been saying this until my face turned blue. I don't know if it could turn blue because of the melanin in my skin, but I've been saying this for months that the difference between Colton Miller and Alex Leatherwood is almost apples to oranges because, as you just said, their struggles as rookies were totally different. One guy played through an injury, the other guy switched positions after 4 weeks into the season. So when I brought up Alex Leatherwood being a guard, a lot of people were outraged over it. And I'm like, if you think about it, if you break it down, he's been an NFL guard long as he's been an NFL tackle. So yes, he has more experience on the pro level at the guard position. So I don't see why that would be a crazy idea to move him back there. Just because he was drafted to be a tackle doesn't mean he's going to be a tackle. Now, I think they're going to give him the reps at right tackle because that's where he's played, according to reports, at training camp. So he's going to get those reps at the position. But we're going to finally see where his weaknesses, where is his strengths, where has he progressed, if there's any progression there. Or is he making the same mistakes that he made last year as a rookie? We'll find out on the field.
And for a lot of the fans and viewers and listeners who've written me over the last day since our Tuesday show, I agreed. I said, listen, we're going based on what we saw in camp. Now, you get these guys out on the field, all right? And then we'll see how they do. So could somebody change our mind after tonight? Absolutely. At least start to, right? So I'm not putting that out of the realm of possibility. Alex Leatherwood could go in. I don't usually see that. You usually see it happen more slowly, but you never know. So I'll give him that. Okay, second thing we want to watch, Mo, in this game, we talked about it on Tuesday a little bit as well, which is the middle of that defense. Who is going to stick up there? Who's going to show up there? We have some veterans, obviously. We talked about the injuries to Bilal Nichols. We talked about the injuries on the end with Frackle. What about that? What about people watching the middle of that defense? Who in particular are you looking to see maybe make a move to make some noise and make the roster and get some significant playing time in the middle of that Raiders defense?
It's definitely got to be my 50-man roster sleeper, Darian Butler. I've been mentioning his name the last few shows. Again, I've been on Darian Butler for months now. So just saying, if he pops tonight, just remember where you
heard. Wait, Mostradamus is later in the show.
I'm just saying. But the middle of the defense is, I think the rotation is pretty much set. You're going to have Denzel Perryman, who's going to get most of the snaps in the middle. And then Jayon Brown and Divine Diablo are probably going to split reps at outside linebacker. And those are going to be your three main guys. It's the spots behind them that are going to be up for grabs. I just mentioned Darian Butler. Kenny Young is in that group. Of course, Micah Kizer went on IR with, I believe, a foot injury, lower leg injury. So he's going to be out for the season. And I believe they have another undrafted free agent there who I think is not going to make the roster anyway. But my focus is on Darian Butler and what he does and the strides that he can make, because he could really be a surprise at that position. I know Kenny Young has the experience, but he hasn't played much special teams in the last couple of years. He hasn't played a significant number of snaps on special teams since 2019. So if Darian Butler could be that guy and flash on defense and contribute to special teams, he should make the final roster.
And what about Cleveland Farrell? Again, not a lot of people talking about him and where he'll play. I know he's probably going to play on the outside, especially now Chandler Jones injured. Who knows? We've been hearing that, but you might also see him shift around. What do we need to see in this first game? We need to see him come out and perform well. Does he have a chance of not making the roster despite his status and the contract status?
No chance that he's cut. I would say no chance, but I mean, the money that's tied to his contract, the Raiders are on the hook for about $10 million. So they don't gain anything if they cut him. He would have to be absolutely awful for them to just cut him. Like, they can't use him at all. And that's not, I don't see that happening. He's going to be on the roster because of his contract. There's an issue. People are saying, well, he could be nicked up. So we don't even know how much he's going to play tonight because he has missed some practices. So we'll see. We'll keep that monitored. The Raiders are kind of short-handed on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of injuries, a lot of guys they might keep out just to keep those guys healthy. And remember, this is preseason week zero. The Raiders have a few more preseason games to go. So if a guy is nicked up, the chances are they might play it safe and just not play him.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Okay, Mo, third thing that people need to watch in this game is, of course, the defensive backs. If we look back there, we now know that at safety position, Jonathan Abram has looked better in the camp and is also there as well with Trevon Moehrig. They both have gotten good praise, but Jonathan Abram has also gotten good praise in every camp, so I don't know how much it means. We'll have to see how they do. And then at cornerback, of course, on the outside, Trayvon Mullen still injured. You have Rocky Sin there as well. Your boy Averett from Baltimore, who came over as well, Anthony Averett. And then you have Hobbs in the slot there. Do we see Hobbs maybe play some outside? Do we see him tested there? What's your point on that?
Yeah, he was listed as the outside cornerback on the preseason depth chart. Again, that doesn't mean he's going to play outside come week one. I think that's part of Trayvon Mullen being out with coming off his surgery. So you might see Nate Hobbs get some reps on the outside just to see how he looks, because remember, he played primarily in the slot as a rookie. So they might just give him a look just in case Trayvon Mullen is not back by week one. You have an emergency plan for a guy who could play outside if it's not Averett and Rocky Sin.
Right. And to me, that's key, because I think, and I've taken that question a few times about, oh, well, he's listed outside. Is he going to play there more and more? Are they going to turn him into an outside? And I think, why would you fix something that's not broken? I mean, he's played so well in that slot. I think he, and I think you believe, I think the kid will be a Pro Bowler. I think that's how good he can be in that slot position. So out of necessity, I can see doing that. But this cornerback room, even though there's a lot of question marks, Mo, it's deeper because of the addition of those two veterans.
Yeah, you bring in Rocky Asin, you bring in Anthony Averitt, Darius Phillips, who a lot of people are not talking about. He had one pretty decent year. I believe he had three picks in the year. He could be in a pinch. I think he'll be more of a dime package guy, but he's going to get some run. But as you said, it's a young cornerback room. It's a lot of, I won't say unproven guys, but a lot of guys who could be on the ascend. So I think you're going to see a lot of Avery. You're going to see a lot of Rocky Asin. You're going to see a lot of Phillips. And even Amik Robinson, who a lot of people are dismissing as a bum already, I think he is going to get a lot of reps. And then we're going to learn a lot about him going into his third year.
Yeah, and I think with Patrick Graham there, with a new coaching staff, that kid's been through a lot too with what's happened, just like all the returning Raiders have. But I'm not ready to give up on him either. Liked him early, still think he's got an opportunity with the right coaching to reach his full potential and right. Be the player he could be there. So it'll be interesting. We'll have fun with that one. So, all right, we are up against our first break already. So that's the three things you need to watch in tonight's game against the Jaguars. What else are we going to talk about? Well, coming up after the break, we're going to honor and talk about the career, the legacy of the man and the player. And that, of course, is number 21, Speed Kills, Mr. Cliff Branch. We're going to talk about that. And later in the show, the mysterious Nostradamus makes his visit to Silver and Black today. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this. Here we go, Raider Nation. It's football season.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back, Raider Nation. It is Thursday night. It is the kickoff, officially, of the Raiders 2023 season. Yes, it's preseason, but I don't care. It is football. It is on the field. It is played with a brown leather ball. Guys in black jerseys with silver pants and silver helmets will be out there doing their thing, and that makes it a very, very, very good night and day. Welcome back, Scott Gulbranson, Mo Moten with you here. Silver and Black Today, an Odyssey original podcast. We certainly appreciate you being with us. Don't forget to subscribe. Just hit that button, whether you're in YouTube or you're in your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Google, it doesn't matter. Just subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating. We appreciate that. Mo's going to pay everybody $10 who gives us a 5-star rating. Right, Mo?
Yeah, sure.
Silence. No, but we'd appreciate it. So thank you. Okay, now we're going to get on to, you know, not only is this game special because of where it's being played at the Football Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, but also because of the Raider who's going to be inducted into the Hall on Saturday. And that is one Mr. Clifford Branch, number 21. Of course, Cliff, I got to be around him a little bit, Mo, just a great guy. And it's really, really sad that he's not here for this one. It's sad anytime any player isn't there for their induction into the Hall of Fame, especially someone like Cliff Branch, who deserved it for so long and didn't get that call and doesn't get to see it. But for his family, I'm so proud and so happy for them that they get to enjoy that. But Cliff Branch, I know you all know who he is, but for maybe some of our younger fans out there, Cliff Branch, 14 seasons with the Raiders. And there's so many stats, I have to have paper here, so I got to read to my paper here. 14 seasons with the Raiders, 4 Pro Bowls, 501 receptions, 8,685 yards, 67 touchdowns. His breakout year, of course, 1974. He led the league with 1,092 receiving yards and 13 touchdowns. Now, compared to today's numbers, that doesn't seem like a lot, but trust me, in 1974, it was alien-like. In 22 playoff games, more importantly, he caught 73 passes, almost 1,300 yards, for an average of 17.7 per catch in the playoffs when it mattered the most. Both are NFL records at the time of his retirement. He also scored 5 career postseason touchdowns, 2 coming in the 27-10 victory over the Eagles in Super Bowl 15. For the postseason, Mo, Jerry Rice is number one all time. We know he's the GOAT when it comes to that. 2,245 yards. Branch is still number two with that almost 13 yards. Also, for those that you didn't know, Cliff was an amazing athlete outside of football, set the NCAA championship meet record in 100 meters with a time of 10 seconds at the 1972 NCAA championship. Takes me 10 seconds to get off the couch. And he placed fifth in the final with 10.1 and then chose to play football after that. He could have gone on to try out for the Olympics and whatnot. But if you look at the productivity of Cliff Branch and what he was able to accomplish and why it took so long, we don't know, although he did tell us why. 3 Super Bowls, he played 14 seasons, as I mentioned. He even played, and I totally forgot about this, and I think him and I had talked about it when he was in the studio when I interviewed him back in 19. He played one season in the Arena League in 1988, like 3 years after he retired from the NFL, Mo. Anyway, Cliff Branch, he's got all the numbers, all the stats, all of the things that you need to get in the NFL. But if you think about what he did alongside his buddy Al Davis and alongside his teammates on those great Raider teams, he really changed the game and how it was played at the position.
All about the speed. Dan Pompey had a great quote in his column this yesterday, and he said getting to Canton was one of the few things that basically Cliff did slowly. And as you rattled off all of his accomplishments and what he did in the meter runs and everything, you would understand that if he were playing in today's league, his 1,000 yards, 1,100 yards would probably be close to 1,800, 1,700 yards. Like, he would be one of those burners. And not to bring up a bad moment, but when the Raiders drafted Henry Ruggs, with John Gruden was at the helm, I believe, and it was mentioned, I believe that that's what they envisioned him to be. At his best, he could be sort of like a Cliff Branch. Stretch the field, put fear into the defenders that you're going to have to move your safeties back because you don't want to give them any type of space, because if you do, you're going to be toast. And I think that was the idea of bringing in Henry Ruggs. Of course, as we know, it didn't work out, had a tragic accident. But back to Branch, in today's league, he is definitely suitable. And there's usually a lot of talk about how players would translate if they played back then or players back then played now. Cliff Branch would definitely translate now, and he'd be a big playmaker. He'd be one of those. I think he would be sort of like what I think Marquise Brown is going to be for the Cardinals this year. I think Marquise Brown, who got arrested for speeding, by the way, yesterday.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have a big year with Kyler Murray, and you're going to see a lot of that magic that they had at Oklahoma. If you remember Marquise Brown at Oklahoma, think about that. That's what Cliff Branch was, probably times 2. If you're a younger fan, don't remember watching Cliff Branch play, or you weren't alive like I wasn't. Just think Marquise Brown at Oklahoma.
Yeah, and that speed, the whole idea of and Al Davis pushing that vertical game, what he wanted to do with the Raiders, what they were able to do with Cliff Branch. I mean, Cliff won all, he was a part of all 3 Super Bowls. And to me, and remember too, and I forgot about this, a viewer on YouTube messaged me the other day about this. He said, remember, and he sent me the report where Cliff, right before he died, a couple of years before he died, I think he was 69 years old at the time, ran a 4.640 at 69 years old. I mean, you talk about just unworldly. That's crazy. So the man was gifted by God with great speed. And he was in great, I mean, the times I was around him later in his life, in great shape, right? So the guy just kept himself in shape, and obviously during his playing career, he did that. But Mo, I think so impressive, because you see a lot of guys who have great careers, who actually go to the Hall of Fame, and they don't necessarily have the type of performance that you see Cliff Branch with in the postseason. I mean, those numbers in the postseason, when you need a player, somebody could rack up numbers. I mean, think of like a Phillip Rivers, right? Racks up all those numbers, can't win in the playoffs, right? But you look at Cliff Branch, what he was able to do when it mattered, when they needed him. And it was remarkable because he always came through in big games. He wasn't known as Mr. Clutch because he was just so good, and he performed when they needed him the most.
Absolutely. He was a big part of that Super Bowl team in 76. I believe that team went 13-1. And his career stretched. I know he wasn't a Pro Bowler or All-Pro player past, I believe, 1976, 77. But he did it with different quarterbacks. He had Ken Stabler. He had Jim Plunkett. He had Mark Wilson for a little bit in there. But he was productive all the way through. Now, I know there was some friction between him and Flores at one point. He made a comment about being in the doghouse. But he was still productive, and he had a long stretch. And you cannot talk about that Super Bowl team in 76 without talking about Cliff Branch and his contributions.
No, absolutely. And then I think if you look at the longevity too, I mean, I know that's even more impressive at the receiver position. Nowadays, you can see guys have really long clears. I mean, you look at Fitzgerald in Arizona and some of the other guys, and even Jerry Rice himself, right? And how long his career was. But you look at when Cliff played starting in the early 70s, receivers are protected much more now than they were then, just like quarterbacks were, right? Cornerbacks could be much more physical. A safety could hit you in the open field. But yet, despite all of that, he was able to play without massive injuries. He was always able to be a game-time guy who could play and contribute, even when he was banked up. And that, to me, is also part of his, I think, his legacy is that longevity and the ability to play and to be there for his team. Because you think about all those great Raider coaches and all those Super Bowls, the three Super Bowls and all the playoff appearances that he appeared in, Cliff Branch was always there. And I think that was one of the things, not only when he retired, but when he passed away at 71, was people were just so used to Cliff Branch being a part of the franchise. Didn't matter if it was on the field or off the field.
Yeah, definitely a Raider icon. A lot of people loved him. A lot of people wanted to see him get in while he was alive. Again, all that matters now that he's in. But back to, you talk about his production on the field. I think while he was playing, the NFL adjusted the 5-yard rule where basically defenders can't touch a receiver 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. And with that rule, it kind of opened it up for him. And I believe it was John Madden said he could run Cliff Branch on short routes, but if he did, it would be stupid. So they ran him on. They ran him on hooks, outs and ups, and it worked for him, and that's when he took off and basically became the all-pro player, Pro Bowl player that we know him to be right now. So kudos to John Madden for recognizing that and helping that guy get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, and then we talk about his legacy off the field and with this organization. We know clearly after Mr. Davis died in 2011 and Mark took over, these two were good friends. Of course, the famous story about Mark negotiating a contract for Cliff and his father not being very happy with him over that. Because they won out on what Cliff wanted. It's kind of that part of that Raider lore. I don't know how much of it is actually true. Mark plays it up as well, so we'll have to take his word for it. But after his playing days were finished, Cliff not only became an ambassador for the team like so many of the Raiders do, because they are welcomed and cheered to do that from the team and really have a place with the organization throughout their life. But Cliff did a lot around charity with kids in Oakland. He did it also in Las Vegas even before. I mean, part of the interview we had with him was before the Raiders were even in Las Vegas, but they had announced they were moving. He was already there talking with kids. I did 2 years in a row of the Toys for Tots event at the Raider Image Store in Town Square in Las Vegas with Cliff and Greg Townsend. Here's a guy who just really loved the brand, the team, and what it stood for, and he really went, I think, above and beyond until the very day he died to be there for the fans and to welcome them. Never turned down an autograph, always talked to people. And that says a lot about his character, Mo.
Yeah, it says a lot about Raider players who do this because, and you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, that a lot of these Raider players feel like they were, you know, slighted because of Al Davis's dealing with the league. And now after their retirement, they come out and they're still part of the community. They still uphold the NFL and they're still grateful for the opportunities that they've had and the NFL presented to them. So for them to turn around after feeling they're being slighted to, you know, give back to the fans, give back to the league, it's just a good thing to see. And that's why, again, he's one of the beloved Raiders in franchise history.
And as we were waiting for Cliff to get inducted in the Hall of Fame and going back to the interview I did with him, we even talked about, you know, players had already been there. Now he's there now, so that's good. But players like Stallworth and players like Lynn Swann, who were on teams that the media seemed to like a little more because of the ownership and whatnot, they're in there. When you look at Cliff Branch overall, and you look at the top 100 of the NFL, and they did the top 100 receivers and all that, and of course he's right up there. Where do you put him in that pantheon when you look at the greatest receivers of all time? Clearly, Jerry Rice, number one. There's no question in my mind. Anybody who could argue against that would be crazy, in my view. But where does Cliff rank in your mind as far as being in that top echelon of the receivers that played in the NFL?
I think he's a level, I don't want to say below, but behind the Tim Browns and the Jerry Rices of the world, simply because they've done it. They did it for a longer period of time. They had a longer stretch of dominance, in a sense, at the position. Mm-hmm. Cliff Branch had his 4-year stretch where he was probably one of the most dynamic receivers in the game. But as you get further on, you see his numbers kind of tail off a bit. Now it's a different era. But I will note that he had 6,047 receiving yards in a 7-year span between 1974 and 1980, which is the most of any player. Yeah. So that's why you got to put him high up on the pantheon. I'm not going to put him next to Jerry Rice and Tim Brown because of the longevity that those guys had. But you got to give respect to Cliff Branch and what he brought to the game, because you can't tell the story of the NFL without him and his speed.
Yeah. And the unfortunate nature of him not being around to see this, it reminds so many of kind of the injustice with Kent Stabler as well. And you can't control that, right? And Raider fans, I think, have moved past it. They're now here to celebrate this. And the Raiders and their fans have had a great stretch here in the last few years with Tom Flores going in as well. I mean, it's been a nice couple years for the Raiders and for their players to be recognized in the Hall of Fame. And it's just such great a feeling to see this guy go in and for him to get his due. So that'll be fun. And it'll be great for him to join the rest of the Raiders there in the Hall of Fame. And I know there's a lot of fans up in Canton celebrating, and they're going to be there on Saturday. And I know I'll be watching, and I know you'll be watching, but it'll be fun to see how that all happens. And the speech recognizing Cliff as well. So do we know? I think Mark Davis is giving the speech, correct?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I got to check on that one. There you go. Well, if you know, I'm sure somebody in the comments on YouTube, which is very lively all the time when we're on the air, will have that in there as well. All right, that is our discussion on the late, great Cliff Branch. Congratulations to him and his family, especially his surviving family, who are all going to be in Canton as well for this great honor. Okay, we'll step aside when we come back for Silver and Black Today, the final segment. He makes his appearance. Yes, it only happens occasionally, and it takes a lot of cajoling, a lot of effort, and a lot of avocado smoothies. But Mostradamus, the man, the myth, the prognosticator like no other, will appear. And he's going to tell us all about what's going to happen tonight in the game coming up next. Make sure you stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe. We'll be back right after this on Silver and Black Today, an Odyssey original podcast.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Silver and Black Today, Scott Branson and Mo Moten. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, by the way, at LVGully and at MOEMOTON. Although Mo is no longer in the building. No, he's not. Instead, in his place, he might look the same on camera if you're watching, or sound the same on voice if you're listening, but the man, the myth, has entered the room, the Swami of all Swamis. That is Mostradamus. He is a seer of things that the rest of us cannot see. He is someone who can predict many, many things that that seem to go against the grain. He just has that sixth sense. I don't know if he sees dead people, but he sees people who might be cut. He sees people who might not start or might start. That is Mostradamus, and we are back talking Raiders football. We're going to go through this segment, have a little fun, and see what Mostradamus has to say. Are you ready, Mostradamus?
Absolutely ready.
I feel 100% like you
ready.
I feel like you should have a hookah or something, like, you know, something that smokes up the room and makes it mystical.
I would, for the viewers, I would put on a do-rag with crystals on it, but I don't think the fans are ready for that yet. Maybe in a future show, you'll get the do-rag with the jewels and crystals on it.
Yeah, I think we should have do-rag shows. I'll wear one too. I only have like 12 of them upstairs. That's all good. So we'll do that. It'll be fun. Yeah, what are you talking about, man? Come on. All right, so Mostradamus is here, and we're going to ask Mostradamus some questions. So here we go, Mostradamus. We're going to ask you the game tonight in Canton, Raiders and Jaguars. Who shines in this game for the Raiders, and who whines, or who won't do so well? Who are we going to be talking about in the positive, and who are we going to be talking about in the negative?
I'll start with the good news, the positive. I think Anthony Averett's going to shine. If you've been watching this show, you know that I think Anthony Averett is basically going to be a Pro Bowl player this year. I'm joking. He's going to be good, okay? I think he's going to show up and show out. The two Butlers, Darian Butler, who I talked about in the previous segment, and Matthew Butler on the defensive line. With Jonathan Hankins and Bilal Nichols on the pup list, Butler and Nile Ferrer Jr. have had a chance for reps during the spring and during training camp. And I think Butler's going to be the guy, burst through the line of scrimmage, get a sack, get a couple tackles for loss. A lot of people will be talking about him. Now, you did say, as far as a guy who's going to whine, I don't want to say whine.
I know. It just rhymes. And that's the only reason I did it.
And it's a tough call for me, but if I had to pick a guy that's not going to maybe not do as well as many people think he will, I'm still skeptical about Brandon Parker. I know Brandon Parker is being touted as the guy to start at right tackle, but I think if he struggles or if he's underwhelms, I think it'll force the Raiders to actually take a look at free agent tackles. Darrell Williams. But if Brandon Parker struggles, the Raiders didn't have to make a call for a free agent tackle, get some insurance there. And I think there could be some issues there because this is the preseason. This is the first game out. So guys aren't going to look as well as fine as they would during the season. You could get some hiccups here and there. And as we watch, Brandon Parker has struggled with pass protection. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it pop up again in this first preseason game.
Now, the only thing that surprises me with that, Mostradamus, is that that kind of goes along with conventional thinking amongst Raider fans who don't like Brandon Parker for the most part. But I see your point, and even though I don't have your crystal ball, which if you're watching us on YouTube, you can see in the little graphic below us. I'm proud of that graphic. That's Kelly Kreiner. That says to me then that the hype machine was too high. Coming from media, right? And we talked about it last show that sometimes that happens. It's just you're out there watching practice, ooh, 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 and then you get groupthink. I mean, it's nothing against the reporters because they're all great, talented folks for the most part, 9 out of 10 of them. But nonetheless, it just says to me that might be true. So I can see where you're seeing that as well. Okay, now we need you to look in your crystal ball and tell us who will. I mean, you talked about guys who will probably do well and maybe struggle, but who is going to surprise people to where they say, holy crap, I never even thought that guy would play well. And there he is doing well out in Canton in the Hall of Fame game.
Meek Robinson wouldn't be the surprise. I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise for me because I'm still on the Meek Robinson bandwagon. I am not giving up on you yet, Meek. I think you're going to ball out tonight. The other guy that people aren't thinking about, T. Billy, Taron Johnson, who I believe Davante Adams spoke about him in one of his pressers. The Raiders don't have a lot of speed at wide receiver. They don't need it because Hunter Renfrow and Davante Adams are ultimately skilled. But if you want a speed guy that can possibly make the roster, I think T. Billy, Taron Johnson, can make some moves, maybe have a big 50-yard reception, open some eyes, and maybe more people will talk about him because Mac Hollins has been all the hype during the offseason. A lot of people talking about Mac Hollins. I think Keelan Cole is going to be the wide receiver 3, but I can see Taron Johnson getting a spot in the back end of the wide receiver spot, contributing to special teams and being that big play receiver on the outside.
So you give Keelan that edge over the two veterans, Taron Johnson and also DeMarcus Robinson?
and Mike Collins too. He's in that group. I think just Keelan Cole's production. He has experience being a lead wide receiver with the Jaguars when he first broke into the league. I believe it was 2017. So he has some productive years with the Jaguars. He had some flashes with the Jets last year. A lot of people not paying attention to that because the Jets quarterback situation is very yucky right now with Zach Wilson. But Keelan Cole had some production. I think based on his previous years, I think he has the edge to get that wide receiver three spot. Now, I just said Matt Collins has had a lot of hype this offseason. He could be the guy. He has the size to make a difference in the red zone. DeMarcus Robinson, a backup for the Chiefs, he was spoke about this last week. He could be a playmaker. He's in the mix. But I think Tyron Johnson having that speed makes him a unique weapon in that wide receiver room, and I think he could surprise a lot of people.
Very good points, Mr. Mostradamus. And I think with that one, my view is that we'll go through the entire preseason, and while somebody will be given the participation trophy of being the starter and being wide receiver three, I believe that we're going to see by committee there through the first few weeks of the season until somebody can emerge. Because I think it's going to be so competitive that it might take a little longer to do that. But that's a good problem to have. And one of those guys will emerge from that with the long-term starter role. All right, so we fast forward, and we don't like to try too often to go to what we would consider a negative. But listen, it's part of the business. Part of these preseason games is to help these teams whittle down their rosters, right? We talk about guys that we like here that we think will make the roster, perhaps start. But Mo, if you have to think about going in what we've heard in camp, and of course, everybody's got an opportunity tonight in Canton to play and play hard and make a roster, or at least stick around a little bit longer. But if we're looking at, we wipe our eyes and rub our eyes in the morning tomorrow on Friday and wake up getting ready for the weekend, and the waiver wire starts moving for the Raiders, who could be the first guy of any kind of substance that you feel is cut?
This is going to sound like a bit of a cop-out. I actually don't think anyone is going to get cut immediately after the game unless that player makes an egregious error. Like there's a penalty or unfortunate guy gets hurt and you have to waive him with an injury designation. I don't think anyone's going to get cut because the first round of cuts isn't until August 16th. So you still have one more preseason game with the Vikings before you have to cut down the rest to, I believe, 85 players. So again, unless there's an egregious error, I don't think anyone's going to get immediately cut after the game. Now, again, if you see a penalty where there are multiple false starts for, I don't know, Alex Bars, I'm just throwing Alex Bars' name out there. Don't take it to the bank. Don't tweet at him. They said Mo's said you're going to get cut. But just using him as an example, if a back-end roster guy, if one of your third stringers has a bad personal foul, has multiple penalties, that guy is probably going to get cut in the next 2-3 days.
Yeah, and understood that. And yeah, they have time to make cuts. But then again, you know, there's opportunities if they go out and sign people, especially you're talking about Williams on the offensive line or Ndamukong Suh on the defensive line, which depends on what they see.
Pierre Paul
as well. Absolutely. Nobody's talking about that still. I thought after the show came out on Tuesday, we'd get a little buzz around that because nobody's really talking about him with the Raiders. So we might have to get you to trumpet a little more because I think it's a good
call. You know what's funny though? When it does catch wind, they'll go, "Oh, Mo, you stole that take from someone else." Nope. I had Jason Pierre-Paul on the Raiders' radar.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, if you remember, you can wind back the tape. I said it. Jason Pierre-Paul. Also, the column is up on Sportsnet. I said he is one of the free agent targets that I would want on the Raiders. One of three: Darrell Williams, Ndamukong Suh, who you just mentioned, are the other two.
Yeah, and we'll see how that line, that defensive front, does against the Jaguars tonight for that one. All right, will Derek Carr, Mostradamus, throw a pass in this game?
On the sideline to one of his buddies, maybe to Devontae Adams, while they're watching the game, but not on the field of play. I mean, most coaches will tell you this, that the practices mean just as much, if not more, than the actual preseason game. So a lot of people are saying Derek Carr should get a series because it's a new system. He's been in the league for 9 years. He's seen it all. He's getting the install at the practices. He doesn't need to play in a live game where guys can actually hit him. Just keep him on the sideline. Keep him in bubble wrap. He can throw some passes to Devontae Adams and Mac Hollins and Hunter Renfrow and Darren Waller on the sideline as they all watch the game comfortably in safety.
There you go. And I agree with that 100%. You said last show, wrap him in bubble wrap. I wouldn't even have, I mean, like you said, have him in the corner in his dress clothes, surrounded by like a pool of yellow jacket security guards. Nobody gets within 20 yards of your starting quarterback in a game like this. I agree 100%. Okay, now we look at the Raiders' offensive line. Will the Raiders' offensive line have an unforced pre-snap penalty?
Oh, yeah, I think that's going to happen. And that's not a shot at the Raiders' offensive line. I think this is what their preseason is for, to work out the kinks and work out the errors. So you're going to have mistakes. This is the first game. These guys haven't put on the pads and played in a game in how many months? Seven months. So,
Right. Yes,
there are going to be mistakes. They're going to be unforced errors. And that's what the Raiders have been working hard to fend against during camp. But you're going to get it on the field during live action. You just hope that you can go back to the drawing board and correct those mistakes.
There you go. Yes, absolutely. And if it's Brandon Parker or Alex Leatherwood, Twitter will explode instantly, which you know is going to happen.
Twitter will the first false start for Brandon Parker or Alex Leatherwood. Oh, cut him. We got to bring in Darrell Williams. Now, I think the Raiders should bring in Darrell Williams anyway. But that first false start, that first holding,
I told you,
that first flag up.
He sucks.
He's a bum. Get rid of him. And I will say on Twitter, I know I'm going to have to say this on Twitter five times.
Yeah.
This is the preseason. This is the time where you're going to make your mistakes. It's going to happen.
Of course. And that's the thing too. I mean, it's not week one against the Chargers. You know, this is where you get the kinks out. The whole point, I mean, they're glorified practices and scrimmages. Okay, yeah, everybody's dressed up like they're going to a cocktail party, but in reality, they're just staying home eating mac and cheese and having a beer. So it's pretty straightforward, and you should not read too much into it. We can read some from it, progress on players and how they're doing, but we shouldn't read too much into it. But fans will, because they're emotional and they're invested, so I get it. Now, this is one of the other predictions I need from you, which is the announcers. Since this is a national game, of course, one of the national games for the Raiders this year, I think four of them. Will the announcers refer to the Raiders as Vegas or Las Vegas more?
Ooh, I think Vegas. Because it just sounds
shorter.
Cooler.
It sounds
cooler. Shorter, and it just sounds cooler. Vegas. Vegas Raiders. You know, like, yes. It just sounds better. Even when I write columns sometimes, I just put Vegas. After the first, this is going to be boring
reference?
People who don't care about, yes.
That's
people,
not AP style, mister. Guys. That's not AP style.
It's not, but I try to get away with it on Sportsnet, where I just say Vegas because it just sounds cooler.
Yeah. And it's so funny, too, because my wife is a Las Vegas native. And if you talk to Las Vegas natives, they hate it. Then the NHL team, the Golden Knights, they left it off, too, in their official name, Vegas Golden Knights. They're not Las Vegas Golden Knights. They are the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's interesting, and I think you're right. I think people even broadcast, like, hey, Vegas, hey. You know, it's not Las Vegas. Now, yeah, you don't say that with other teams, but it's the same thing when announcers, hey, we're in L.A., right? It's not a slight on the city. It's not them being lazy. It just kind of flows better.
Yeah, no offense to any Las Vegas residents who are listening to the show. I will say Las Vegas. I almost said it. Yes, I did. But I will say Las Vegas on the show, but no offense. It's just, again, it just has a cool ring to it. That's all.
Will anyone, I know it's been three seasons now, or we're into our third season, but will anyone call the Raiders Oakland on this broadcast?
Not on this show, but on the broadcast, I guarantee you it's going to happen because some people still say the San Diego Chargers.
Yes.
You know, so that Oakland Raiders name is not going to die. I'm sure Oakland people in Oakland who are listening to the show are pumping their fists right now. And you're going to hear it. I think if I had to set the over under, I would say twice. You'll probably hear it two or three times if I go to push or over. You're going to hear Oakland Raiders a couple of times on that broadcast.
Probably from an aging referee. That's going to be my guest. Holding Oakland, right? That tends to be where you hear it mostly. Even the San Diego ones, it's the same thing. Tends to be the referees because they said it over. I mean, they're speaking publicly and they say it over and over again like broadcasters do too. But it'll be interesting. Okay, so now I know it's not the result of the game at the end of the day doesn't really matter. But Raider fans are really competitive. They want to win every game they can. who wins this game by the time we get to third and fourth stringers and they're playing it out at the end of this game and everybody's filtered out of the stadium already as well in Canton, who's going to win this game?
Don't forget, Scott, this is also for Kelly Kreiner, who's a degenerate, probably betting on this game. But I will say, go ahead.
No, I was going to say he's probably betting on all sorts of stuff related to the game.
I think he's betting the under in this game, by the way. Which is just a good
He mentioned it on Twitter.
I think the Raiders win this game simply because, not because this is a Raiders show, but because they have competitive battles at some key positions. We talked about the wide receiver spot. We talked about the cornerback position. Even Jarrett Stidham, they're saying, has a potential chance to win the primary backup quarterback job over Nick Mullins. So I think it's going to be very competitive at those spots. It's going to get the Raiders to put up a lot of points over the Jaguars, who surprisingly are pretty much set on the defensive side of the ball. They do have some questions at wide receiver, Laviska Shenault Jr. Will he be a factor in that group? Because Zay Jones is now their former Raider, now penciled in as a starter, as we just said, preseason depth charge don't mean anything. They paid him $24 million over 3 years.
Yeah, they gave him
so
money.
They Good have some questions. Right. Thanks to Derek Carr, too, by the way.
Yes.
But the Jaguars have a question there, but they don't have as many questions at key positions as the Raiders do, with guys of quality competing. So I think that will be the edge. And I think the Raiders win by a touchdown.
There you go. And again, I think that battle for the backup quarterback, we talked about it, Mullins having the edge there, and I would be shocked if it's not him. But you never know. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Stidham comes out, and I think this is a little bit of, I know it's less than the regular season, but this is a little bit of the excitement to watch those two guys compete, because there's no more question about who the quarterback is going to be in Las Vegas for the time being, right? And so we don't have to go through all that rigmarole we've had the last couple of years. But that backup position, now that Mariota is gone and starting in Atlanta, between Stidham and Mullins is very interesting to me, because I just want to see, and I want to see how Stidham does. Because even if he's the third quarterback, he's a guy that obviously Josh McDaniels likes. And if you're going to develop a quarterback of the future, or maybe a bridge quarterback for when Derek Carr steps aside eventually and they have to go draft somebody, it's just good to see these guys develop and understand. Also, knock on wood, it's just part of the game, injuries. Derek Carr's got to go out for a quarter, for a half, for a game, for 2 weeks, whatever. You want to see what's there to keep that machine rolling. So it'll be exciting to watch those guys. Well, Mostradamus, thank you for blessing us with your presence and your predictions.
You can take all those to the bank if you guys want to make some extra cash. I threw out some nuggets there. I said Raiders by a touchdown. You know, I had a sack for Matthew Butler. There are player props available. Just, you know, keep that in your back pocket if you want to win some extra cash today.
Use the code Mostradamus to get your... No, I'm just kidding. We got to get that. We should get that moving. But the other thing is, on Saturday, Mo, in addition to the Hall of Fame induction, another massive national event that everyone must pay attention to, which is the Silver and Black Today Fantasy League Draft, which we now know the draft order. Do you want to talk about the draft order?
I'll let you go ahead, Scott.
We did random draft order. We're doing it on Yahoo. For you guys that know, you met the folks that are in our league. We're playing myself, Mo, Kelly, and our producer, David Stepanian, are playing against listeners. You can watch the show a couple times ago to see them. But we'll be talking to them. We'll be talking to Kelly as well starting next week, because on Tuesday, we'll have a post-draft segment here with Kelly. We'll see if he had a good weekend betting, he'll be really happy. If he hasn't, then he'll be funnier because he'll be ornery. But we did a random order and I got the first pick, to which Kelly, of course, then starts to accuse me of trying. I'm like, dude, it's random. I can reset it and randomize it again. And I asked everybody, they didn't care. So anyway, I am first and Mo is number 12
in the draft, of course,
the first round. So I don't actually like the first pick because, you know, it's in fantasy football, it doesn't matter as much. It's not like real football. You can do a lot in the middle. I like being in the middle of the round, actually, especially when you flip it and you're going into the second round and you're drafting again. I hate drafting first, or like you, 12th, because then you got to wait all that time. Now, we did turn on trades of draft picks. Once the draft starts, we can actually trade picks, but they're only for picks next year. That's how Yahoo does it. So it'll be interesting to see, but I am all ears. No.
We'll see what happens. But anyway, that's the draft order, and everybody's gunning for Mo, as we know, because he's cocky when it comes to fantasy. It's the only thing he's cocky about. He's confident when it comes to his writing ability, but Mo, number 12, what are you thinking in that spot? Give us a little hint.
Scott, thanks for trying to sabotage me and stack against me. It's only going to make my victory that much sweeter when I go undefeated and I raise the trophy. And everyone's looking up at me as the Vince Lombardi of fantasy football yet again. Even with the 12th pick, I will still dominate everyone in the league. Mark it down, book it.
Wow. Doesn't we can matter. Even do a mockumentary. Even though he had the 12th pick, he came
that's
from
the 30 for 30 episode.
It's a 30 for 30 that's episode,
a,
yes.
That's a 30 for 30 right there.
But it's fun. But anyway, we will get you the results of our fantasy draft on Tuesday. We'll have Kelly on for our final segment of the show, and we'll talk about that. But seriously, Mo, good luck with pick number 12. It's still the first round. It's fantasy football. My best picks always come in the second, third, and fourth round anyway. So it'll be interesting. And I don't like the pressure of having the first pick because it's like, every time I've had a first pick, I pick a guy like McCaffrey a couple years ago, injured, right? A couple years before that, another player was one of the quarterbacks. It was another running back, injured. It stinks. But anyway, we'll deal with it, and we'll all
I will say this, though. I'm well prepared for this because I've actually been sabotaging another league where I was the 12th. I had the 12th pick. So
yeah,
I'm used to this unfair treatment by now. It's like Raider icons who should have been in the Hall of Fame long ago. I'm used to this type of treatment. And I shall still overcome.
So you're like you're sort of like the Al Davis of this fantasy football league because you're fighting all the powers that be. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's absolutely right. It's only fitting. It's only fitting.
All right. Well, we'll have fun with that. We'll see how everybody does. I'm sure Kelly will have his draft grades, and I don't know how biased they'll be. They'll probably be pretty biased, but we'll have fun with that anyway. But Mo, looking forward to watching the game tonight. We're also going to be doing a post-game show after the game, which you'll see on YouTube right away, and then you'll see here on audio on Friday morning. So make sure you stay with us there. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube. Also subscribe to the podcast. Mo, enjoy the game, buddy, and we'll talk to you afterwards.
All right. Take care, everyone, and enjoy the game. Try not to bust a blood vessel. It's just preseason. Remember that. First game.
Yes, it is. All right, there you go. That has been Silver and Black today. We are an Odyssey Original Podcast. For Mo Moten, for our producer David Stepanian, I am Scott Gilbranson. Thanks, Raider Nation. Take care of one another, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Excuse me. Yes, tomorrow if you're listening on audio. Tonight on video. So we'll talk to you post-game. Take care, everybody, and enjoy the Hall of Fame game in Canton. Take care.